Welcome to the North and South of Things podcast, a show dedicated to discussion of topics important to the LGBT community and the community at large. Here are your hosts, Mark and George.
Hey kids, welcome to the latest episode of the North and South of Things, and I am Mark up here in St. Paul, Minnesota, and joining me from Atlanta, Georgia is George in Atlanta. Hi George, how are you?
Hey Mark, I am well. Oh my gosh, winter is here, Christmas time is here, snow is falling on the ground in some place, but not here.
And it's not falling on the ground here either. It's falling as rain today, which is okay, because if you translate an inch of rain in snow terms, that's about 6 to 8 inches.
Wow.
And we could all be so lucky as to have 6 to 8 inches.
But couldn't we? Ba-dum-bum-tsh. Thank you.
Well, George, we're going to be talking about the incredible shrinking queer space today.
Now, is that a move? Is that a movie? Well, is that anything like Star Trek?
It could be a horror movie, or it could be something else. You know, it could be a romantic comedy, for all we know.
A rom-com. I love a rom-com.
I think you can agree, George, that there is this issue in our community about a specifically queer safe space that is kind of disappearing from our midst. I think we can all point to our local neighborhood gay bar as an example of dedicated queer space that has played an important part within our community's history. Certainly Stonewall in New York also played a part in our history as a people. What does the gay space currently look like in Atlanta?
It looks a lot like a Target. No, I'm just kidding. Part of the issue with this topic is the empirical data. There's not a lot of people who track this, so there's no real sense. You just kind of have to have your own sort of perspective on it. Mm-hmm. I know when I first moved to Atlanta in 99 and then again in 2000, long story, don't go there. It wasn't even at its peak then. Its peak was really in the late 80s and 90s. And I believe at one point I had the popular magazine around here for the club scene is called the David magazine. Mm-hmm. And then there were some that preceded that. I believe I remember as many as 45 gay bars being listed in a directory. That feels like that's more in the low 30s or high 20s now.
Now this is it in Atlanta specifically?
In Atlanta, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And it might be, you know, slightly outside of the city of Atlanta limits, but within mm-hmm. Metro Atlanta, yeah. Yeah.
Sure, and the surrounding suburbs.
I think it's not as big an issue for Atlanta just because it is still quite the gay city. Mm-hmm. But we are beginning to see this happen, that I think other cities may have seen it even more pronounced.
Mm-hmm. I know here in the Minneapolis and St. Paul area, it's not as vibrant as Atlanta is. I mean, 30 or 35 venues to kind of go and commiserate with people of like mind. Seems kind of like nirvana. Here in Minnesota, we are pretty fortunate. But over the years, the number of establishments have changed. Right now, let me see. If I think quickly, there are two venues in St. Paul that I am aware of. And I want to say there's like 4 or 5 in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And that is down from there used to be in St. Paul alone I want to say 4 different venues.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're down to 2. And I'm also seeing a change in one specifically. But before I get to that, let's talk a little bit about our own personal history. How has the gay bar or the gay coffee house played a role in your own coming out? How did you interact with these sort of gay specific places?
Well, I think my response to that question would be best formed in a bell-shaped curve. The trajectory is kind of perfect, perfectly split. You know, it is immediately connected to my coming out. I mean, it's the first time, back in 1991, I think was the first time I ever went out. And it was really kind of after that that I sort of felt like I was an out person and sort of mm-hmm. began acting like an out person. And back in rural Virginia, you didn't really come out. You sort of partially came out. You never fully admitted it, mm-hmm. but you also didn't take, beards to events. You just sort of let people assume what they assume. And so back in that time, I can see a clear parallel between when I felt more comfortable being out was when I was able to be around other people in those establishments. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. This was in the nearest bar to me in Virginia was an hour and a half drive away in Johnson City, Tennessee. And one tiny little bar that served an entire region. And it's parallel. Its comparison to Atlanta is stark in that one bar had to serve so many different segments of the LGBT community. And for those who aren't fully aware, there are more than just the L, the G, the B, and the T in mm-hmm. our community. We've talked about a lot of those communities. And then moving to Atlanta, where you have one bar that's just for the S&M crowd. And by S&M, I mean stand and model. They're just the pretty mm-hmm. boys. you have the Levi and Leather crowd. There was a country bar where you could line dance, and it was quite festive. It has since closed. There were a few coffee shops and a few bookstores. The bookstore has closed on Atlanta's probably most gay corner is 10th and Piedmont. There used to be Outright Books that was really the nucleus of the gay community in Atlanta. And, just a stone's throw from where we first started participating in a pride at Piedmont Park. And for me, there's a rocket launch in terms of my parallel with being out and being comfortable with myself and understanding the gay life that parallels perfectly with going to clubs. I think things changed in the last 10 years, and so that is the downside of that bell curve. mm-hmm. It's just not important in my life. I would say that I was in some setting that was gay 3 or 4 times a week, certainly on the weekends, mm-hmm. whether it's a gathering of friends at somebody's house or whether it's at a coffee place or a bookstore or a club. Now it's maybe once a quarter.
Right.
If that. It's episodic, some years more than the other. But it's this connection that we have with the internet. I don't use the dating apps or whatever they're called, the meat lockers. But I get that for others, those things have sort of filled a need and replaced the need to go out. For me, I'm just too tired. I work too much. And when I come home, I just want to, chill. How about you? Exactly. What's been your experience?
Well, my experience actually started probably pretty early. I want to say I remember specifically the first time that I went to a gay bar. I want to say the year was probably 1987 or 88. The name of the bar was Cloud Nine.
Of course it was. Not the cockpit.
No.
The manhole.
It was Cloud Nine, and my friend Scott was home from college. He was a very close and dear friend. It's probably the first person that I ever came out to, and we're actually still friends to this day. We reconnected not too long ago. He's living currently in Florida, but I remember this specifically. It was a Saturday night, Cloud Nine. And at this point, I was 19, and in Minnesota at that time, I was the last generation that was grandfathered in, that was legal to drink at the age of 19, after the year after it changed to 21. Mm. So I remember this very clearly, that back at that time, you know, having to show ID to get into a bar. And, you know, it was on Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis, which at the time had kind of succumbed to a little bit of urban decay. And this is where this strip basically...
Urban decay, perfect place for a gay bar.
That's right. At that time, there was probably at least four gay bars that were on that. It was Cloud Nine. It was the Saloon, the Gay 90s, and another one. I want to say it was Moby Dick's. But I'm not exactly sure on the names of that. But I do remember specifically... Schinder's bookstore, which was an adult bookstore, that's where you went for your gay porn. Mm. And it was at the time where, you know, there were, you know, video booths in the back where you would put in the tokens and, you know, the whole glory days as it
wait,
were.
I'm sorry, wait, what, the whole glory hole glory days? Yeah. Nicely done, sir.
Thank you. So I do remember this, and the Bronski Beat, mm-hmm. which is a band that yep. is affiliated with us, was thumping in the background. And it was kind of... It was both exhilarating and shaming, but both at the same time, mm-hmm. if you can understand that, mm-hmm. because you had to...
I'm a gay man. Of course I can understand that. That's my calling card.
Exactly. But I do remember specifically, you know, it was a space where it was okay to ogle other men. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I do remember that weekend specifically. Now, fast forward a few years.
Hey, can I ask? I want to ask a question about your first trip.
Sure.
Do you remember the first song you heard?
You know, I don't. I would have to go back to that album. I want to say it was West End Boys.
Oh yeah, that would be about right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine was Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You. I was so sad and scared.
Oh wow. That is.
Thankfully the music picked up after that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So fast forward a couple of years later, there was this is when I am living first time out of the house, which was quite late for me. But my roommates and I would go to this place in St. Paul called Club Metro. And this is my idea of the perfect gay bar entertainment complex, because basically it was a huge building. And within it, there were there was a dance bar and sort of kind of restaurant on the main floor with a patio and volleyball court outside on that main floor. Then you went to the basement, and there was a shop that sold various pride merchandise and also fetish gear. Then there was also a huge techno kind of bar that was rather cave-like and lots of thumpa-thumpa music. That happened to be my favorite because things got pretty wild in there on a Saturday night. There was a karaoke bar that was down the hall and kind of tucked away on the side, where I at one point shared a very drunken duet of Madonna's Like a Virgin, which was...
I'm sorry, upon. A duet with who?
I was at this bar on that night, and I had come across someone that I used to work at Sears, Roebuck & Company back in the 80s and the late 80s, early 90s. And we ran into each other actually in the restroom, and his name was Eric, and he said, "Oh my God, it's Mark. I always knew." And so then we started chatting, and we decided he wanted to buy me a drink, so we went to the karaoke bar, and a couple of Long Island iced teas later, both he and I were upstage trying to sing Like a Virgin. So
I love it.
And in the very back of this complex was a sports bar. So you had pool tables and dart boards, and it literally had something for everyone.
I love that. There was a bar in Nashville. I don't enunciate clearly enough sometime, not Asheville. There's also a lovely bar there. Nashville, or Nash Vegas, as we called it. That's when you're going on a gay trip. Everything gets the dash Vegas at the end of it. Nash Vegas, Knox Vegas, Vegas. there's a bar there called The Chute, and it was much like that. It was all on one level, but, you know, you walked in the first part, and you just got sort of the traditional disco bar, and then you'd go back a little further, and it was the country bar, and a little further, it was the S&M location, and its environment changed, the music changed, the lighting changed. Really neat. Atlanta's, I guess, probably a lot of interesting bars in Atlanta, clubs, scenes. The Atlanta's answer to the Studio 54 would be Backstreet, which had been grandfathered in to be open 24 hours a day. That has since gone away, as the owners were found to be complicit in illicit drug activity. That is now a 30-story condo building right across the hall from me, right in front of me. So I actually wanted to buy in that building instead of where I am, because I just wanted to be able to tell people, "Where do you live? You know where Backstreet was? Yeah, there." multi-leveled, multi-experiential, massive dance floor that, you know, had these little stages that would jut out of seemingly nowhere, where somebody would come out and throw 2,000 what do you call those things? The light sticks, glow sticks, or
Siloam.
Yeah. Or a drag queen would drop from the ceiling, suspended from the ceiling, just an incredible light show and all that kind of stuff. Right down to just the regular small hole in the wall, just about any sort of experience you could imagine.
Well, and
you could find in Atlanta.
And sadly, as many of these venues have gone by the wayside, I know Cloud Nine is no longer there, hasn't been for years, decades, actually. And Club Metro, which was the destination point, it was always crowded on a Friday, Saturday night. You know, literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people would be there. And it's no longer. Its attendance sort of, the business kind of dropped off over the years, and mm-hmm. then the venue was sold to some developers in the Asian American community here in the Twin Cities. And so that changed dramatically. And then there was some sort of suspicious fire, and it's basically no more.
Right.
And I know right now there is a bar that I have gone to. It's been a gay bar for probably, I want to say, 30 years at least. It was known as Trix back in the day. It was owned by a lesbian.
Really?
It was Trix. Named Trix. I actually remember one of the first times being there. It was kind of, you went in, there were no windows in this building, and it was kind of seedy, and there was a dance floor in the back.
Haven't you just described 95% of all gay bars?
Probably about 95% yeah. of gay bars everywhere. And then it changed ownership, and it became a Camp Bar, and it was totally redone. And I was very excited about this because basically they added a lot of windows. They upgraded everything. It became a very light, airy, open, and welcoming space where you didn't have to kind of slink through mm-hmm. The front door that had a porthole on it. and you could really have an enjoyable time. And it was very gay. But I have also noticed that recently it changed ownership again, probably, I want to say, 18 months ago or so. And they basically de-gayed it.
Oh.
I mean, they took down the chandeliers. They took the oil painting of Liza Minnelli and Madonna off the walls. And basically they kind of, it's still Camp Bar, but it's now the woods type camp.
Mm.
It's, and I've been very critical of this change because they've kind of basically gotten rid of that gay sort of camp feel
mm-hmm.
and have changed it more towards a resort. And I understand kind of the philosophy behind it. There's been some buzz in the press about it here. And they're trying to appeal more towards everybody.
I think that is the trend, and I'd love to get your thoughts on why this is happening in the first place. I have an opinion, but I do see a shift in Atlanta that there's a lot of places that, you know, clearly are a gay establishment, but they have gone the extra mile to try and make it an environment that's welcoming to everyone, especially in a city that gets its, you know, earns its dollars on the tourism aspect. I do see a lot of places that are, you know, they'll open up and you're like, oh, that must be a gay place because it's fabulous. And you're like, oh, no, that's got everybody. And you go in and it does. And then you have some places, Lips is a now a chain. It started in Fort Lauderdale, and it's camp, and it's sort of Sunday brunch. It's where you go for a special thing. And we have one in Atlanta now, and there's probably more straight people in there. You know, the girls getting together for somebody's special birthday, and by girls I mean girls. You know, I do see a shift in that. One, marketing the gay thing, you know, the camp drag thing to draw in the straight crowd, and then two, places that are just, you know, a little more homogeneous in terms of, you know, could appeal to anybody. I'm of the opinion that I'm probably more, I'm not an outlier when it comes to the average gay man and his, you know, his going out schedule or routine versus mm-hmm. that same routine years ago. I feel like that, you know, society has changed. We have our, sort of our well-established group of friends. We do different things. We go to dinners. We go to, you know, we travel together. We do these sorts of things. So we don't have the same, quote, need for the bar, the club, if you will. This probably wouldn't and shouldn't apply to coffee houses and places like that. But I think it's just the demographics, the aging of a huge baby boomer population that doesn't have that same need or gets those needs met in different ways. What do you think?
You know, I think you have a point. One of the struggles that I see upcoming for us of a certain age, and I'll count myself in that camp, you know, the gay bar served as a very important touchstone. It's where we met and made our friends, have met our partners, and started our own sort of gay life. And with society becoming more accepting of us, mm-hmm. and when we have things like marriage equality finally being realized in the country, that specific space really doesn't play an important part for those, you know, I hate the term millennials, but I'm going to use it anyway.
Right.
You know, and I have friends who are in their early and mid 30s, late 30s, who are still going out, and on occasion I will join them. And it really hasn't changed very much. It's still, I don't know, it seems to me when I was, you had mentioned the S&M club, the stand and model. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always been the young, pretty boys who have garnered the most attention. And, you know, there are various reasons for that. But, you know, it's like... with the advent of social media and things like Grindr and Scruff and Facebook, Instagram, you know, it's easier to meet people either virtually or in real life.
Meet or stay connected to people you already know.
Yeah. And so I don't think it functions in the same place. Mm-hmm. Now, the challenge I see is when our community is aging. One of the things that I know I think about on occasion is, you know, when I get to be a retirement age, you know, if I decide that I want to be part of a retirement community or a 55 and older sort of community, or God forbid I have any health problems that come up and then I need assisted care, you know, am I going to have to go back in the closet? And I think that's... Mm. Another thing that is going to face us when we talk about queer space.
Diminishing space, yeah. Some great, interesting articles we'll put in the show notes at northandsouthofthings.com. There's some interesting studies out there. We're running out of time. Don't have time to talk about it today, but some interesting studies about... you know, what this congregation of folks means and what it means to folks in those later years of their life. And is it possible that the lack of interest or the lack of attendance in these community spaces, is that leading to an increase in AIDS and an increase in HIV rates in some communities? Some fascinating stuff. You know, for me, if you want to get this queer back out, mm-hmm. for God's sakes, open up a piano bar with some comfortable seating.
Exactly.
Is that too much to ask for? That's probably, honest to God, if you had to nail it down, other than not wanting to drink and drive, the number one issue is, I just want a comfortable place to sit down, for Christ's sake. I'm tired of bar stools and standing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the idea of a lounge where you can have conversation or a little bit more intimate sort of entertainment, I think. So if there are any marketers and developers out there, I just want to kind of put that bug in your ear. And we'd really like to hear about your experiences about gay space, gay bars, gay coffee houses, what gay space is like where you are. You can always tweet us or get in touch with us via Facebook and Twitter. So, George, this was a stimulating conversation, and I think it's a topic that we can revisit sometime in the future.
Absolutely. I'm going to see if I can find some empirical data. There's very little of it available, but certainly a topic we can visit again.
All right. Thanks for joining me today, George.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to this episode of The North and South of Things. More information available at northandsouthofthings.com. Follow Mark on Twitter at Laughing Buddha. That's LaughingBuddha. And George at George in Atlanta. Our podcast theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.